Hi everyone, I'm Sunny Dutra. I'll be the moderator for the call-in presentation today, and I'm delighted to welcome you to today's presentation with Nancy Bloom, who will be presenting on her innovative contribution to the treatment of BPD through the STEPS Group Treatment Program for Borderline Personality Disorder. So before we begin, I'll cover a couple of administrative details, and then I will introduce Nancy, and she'll get started with her presentation. So if you're registered for the call-in series, you should have Nancy's slides. If you haven't received them or need to register for the series, you can email neabpdcalls@aol.com, and we'll get you registered and or get you the slides right away. We'd like to acknowledge the Gunderson residents at McLean Hospital and the Clearview Treatment Programs who are very generously helping to sponsor this program. If you would like to make a contribution to NEABPD to support the production and archiving of these calls, you can do so by clicking on the link in the weekly email or going to the Donate tab on the NEABPD website at www.borderlinepersonalitydisorder.com. Once we get started with the presentation, you can email in any questions along the way or at the end by sending them to neabpdcalls@aol.com. If there are clarifying questions, I may jump in along the way. We'll also pause at a halfway point if any questions come up in the first half, so feel free to send those in. And otherwise, I will save questions for the end. We will plan to finish promptly at 9 p.m., and the audio and slides from the call will be archived at borderlinepersonalitydisorder.com, so please feel free to pass that on to people in your network. So with that, I will introduce Nancy Bloom. She is a social work specialist, adjunct clinical faculty member, and researcher in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Iowa, Carver College of Medicine. She'll be presenting this evening on her work on the development and implementation of the STEP program, which stands for Systems Training for Emotional Predictability and Problem Solving, and is an empirically based group treatment for BPD. She's been co-investigator and director of a four-year NIMH-funded research grant on borderline personality disorder and currently serves as a consultant and provides training in the Iowa Department of Correction to implement the STEPS program. She's also an adjunct instructor at the College of Medicine, College of Nursing, and School of Social Work at the University of Iowa and is a fellow of the American Psychotherapy Association. She was a medical editor and writer for many years prior to receiving her master's in social work. She's the co-author of the Structured Interview for DSM-IV Personality and STEPS Group Treatment Program for Borderline Personality Disorder, as well as author or co-author of numerous journal articles and book chapters. Ms. Bloom presents numerous training workshops on psychiatric topics both nationally and internationally. And with that, I'd like to thank Nancy for so generously volunteering her time and welcome you all again to tonight's presentation, and I'll hand it over to you.
Thank you, Sunny, and to Perry Hoffman, and to all of the people who are listening to the presentation. And as Sunny mentioned, at the end of part one, I will take a couple of questions, and then we'll save the remainder for the end of the presentation. I'm delighted to be part of this series to talk about the STEPS program. As Sunny indicated, it stands for Systems Training for Emotional Predictability and Problem Solving, which refers to not only teaching people with borderline PD emotion management and behavioral skills to better manage the disorder, but to also teach the language of the program to all those people in their system with whom they regularly interact and share information. And I'll expand on that as we go on. I also would like on the next slide, slide two, to acknowledge my co-authors, Don St. John on the left as you're looking at the screen, and Bruce Fole on the right, and on the next slide, to give credit to my co-author, Norm Bartels, who in fact originally came up with the idea of the systems approach to treatment. It was a much smaller program than the current program and a much smaller manual, but with his help and encouragement, I was able to expand the program and to begin training people to use it, and he very generously many years ago said, put your stuff and mine together, and this is your program. He remains a consultant on the program. And on slide 4, I would like to acknowledge Dr. Don Black from our department. For professionals who may be listening in, Dr. Black is very familiar because of his work on impulse control disorders, but also because he really took the lead in making sure that we demonstrated that STEPS is evidence-based. I'm going to skip slides 5 and 6 because you can look at those at your leisure and go on to slide 8, actually, to talk about who uses STEPS. Originally, the program was conceived of as an outpatient program where patients would come once a week for a 2-hour session, learn a skill or part of a skill, take it back to their natural environment to apply it. Over the years, we have found that the other settings listed on this slide have, in fact, used the STEPS program or some of the parts of the STEPS program that are particularly helpful in their environment. And again, as you go down the list, you will note that it says primarily used with adults. However, there have been many places who have used it with older adolescents. And this led us to realize that we do need to have an adolescent version. Currently, an adolescent version is in preparation, in cooperation with one of the health partnerships in the National Health Service in England. And there's been a pilot study of the program. We are now making the revisions, and we will also make it available, of course, in the U.S. As we move on to slide 9, let me talk about some of the important aspects of the STEPS program. First of all, it is a group format. This does not mean that someone could not use it in individual therapy. And in fact, there are situations where individual therapists have used it when they are not in a setting to be able to do a group, or perhaps a patient is not able to come to group because of their schedule, or because it may be several weeks until another group is available. However, there is a lot of power in a group format because it does allow people in the group to see that other people have and struggle with this disorder. But more importantly, it becomes a support system and a safe place to practice using the skills. One of the things I've noticed over the years when I have been a group leader is that also members of the group sometimes act as a mirror for one another. I think many of us have had the experience of someone pointing out something that we are doing or perhaps the way we are thinking about something, and we are not aware of it. But when we see it in a person who might be sitting across the table, there's that light bulb moment when perhaps suddenly we think, maybe that's what I do, or maybe that's what it looks like to other people. So that's also very helpful. It is a psychoeducational approach. I think that knowledge is power, and learning as much as you can about the disorder as well as the skills to manage it, again, is very empowering. The STEPS model employs cognitive behavioral principles that have been shown to be effective in other disorders as well as borderline PD, combined with training in specific emotion management and behavioral skills. One of the unifying concepts in the program is to become aware of cognitive filters or thought filters. And Jeff Young, who has pioneered the schema-focused therapy for borderline personality disorder, very generously allowed us to adapt his questionnaire to approximately 64 questions for identifying the most common maladaptive schemas or filters. This model includes the reinforcement team, and that's the name we give to all of those people in the patient system. As I mentioned, the people with whom they share information about the disorder and who can then learn to most effectively reinforce the skills the person is learning. And one of the most important ways to do this is learning the STEPS language. I often remark that one of the strengths of working in delivering mental health treatment is because it is so interdisciplinary. On the other hand, one of the pitfalls occasionally is that every discipline has its own language. And so we often have the language of psychiatry, psychology, the language of substance abuse treatment, voc rehab treatment. Every profession has its own language. And very often, people with borderline personality disorder, in fact, interact with a wide variety of professionals and agencies in obtaining services. When the emotional intensity is very high, and we characterize borderline personality disorder as a disorder of emotional intensity. When emotional intensity is very high, it's very common for the patient to access several different parts of the system. And even though each professional or other helper or family member in their system may be giving them essentially the same feedback or the same message, when you're in a place of high emotional intensity, it often seems like you're hearing different messages because they're all using somewhat different words. And so I can remember many times of saying something to a patient, and the patient would say, "Oh, but my psychiatrist said," "Oh, but my voc rehab person said," "Oh, but my case manager said." And then as professionals, we often find ourselves feeling frustrated because we believe that the person is doing what is sometimes referred to as splitting the treatment team. But in our experience, our approach is that this is the reflection of being in a place of high intensity and not being able to sort out the essence of these various languages. So by having a common language for patients to communicate about the disorder, but also for all members of the system to communicate about the disorder, is often something that helps to decrease the emotional intensity just because You are hearing the same words no matter where you go. It also is extremely helpful to members of the reinforcement team who, again, may find that they can also be in a place of emotional intensity when they feel frustrated because the person with BPD doesn't seem to be hearing them. So I think the common language is helpful on both sides. The next slide, slide 10, we refer to steps as a value-added or supplemental treatment, meaning that it is not a stand-alone program. It does not include individual therapy, although most people who attend a STEPS treatment group also have an individual therapist. What we ask from the individual therapist is that he or she supports what the person is learning while they are attending the STEPS group. But that also means that the person attending the STEPS group considers the individual therapist a member of the reinforcement team and has a role in teaching what they are learning to their individual therapist. This means taking their binder with them to individual therapy and often reviewing their homework assignment with the individual therapist. So it allows the individual therapist to also learn the language of the model. What we have found is that patients and individual therapists both report that this seems to decrease the frequency of contact with the individual therapy between appointments, and over time may also decrease the frequency of the number of appointments that they are using for individual therapy. Again, that varies depending on the preference of the individual therapist as well as the patient. We have found that the STEPS program is supported by insurance or managed care companies, and that it is listed on the National Registry of Evidence-Based Programs and Practices. Now, moving on to the next slide. STEPS focuses on the present. What we tell patients is that, yes, the past is very important. However, during the time that you are in the STEPS program, we know that we cannot go back to the past and redo it, that we really can only deal with what is happening at the present time. We also talk about learning to manage this disorder called borderline personality disorder, and to reinforce to the person in the STEPS program that hopefully they are no longer in a situation where they may have been a victim in the past, that again, in the present time, they are presumably an adult and able to determine at least some of their own destiny. We also know that for some people with this disorder, there may have been cases where we could look back and perhaps lay some blame on circumstances, but we also know that blaming does not move us forward, and sometimes we can get stuck. We also know that we cannot control other people in the environment. And so STEPS really aims to empower the person with the disorder. STEPS also helps people to give up the expectation that there are other people or things out there to rescue them. We think it's very important that they have someone providing mental health service, an MD or another professional, if they are on medications, someone with that is doing the prescribing. But we also know that medications are not magic by themselves. And so, again, if people are on medication, we certainly encourage them to follow the recommendations of their prescribers. As I mentioned earlier when I was talking about working with an individual therapist, we ask patients to teach the skills they are learning to others in their system. Now, again, as far as sharing homework assignments, it is totally up to the individual as to whether they want to share their homework assignments with those other than their individual therapist or how much they want to share. But at a minimum, we would like them to teach the language of the program to the important people with whom they regularly interact. And in a little while, I will talk about how we also help with that particular process. In the past, we have done surveys of both patients and therapists and found a high level of satisfaction and acceptance. I think it's important, we're on slide 12, to think about if you are someone who is considering perhaps leading a STEPS group as a professional, that one of the questions is how to select people to participate in the group. I do not want to give the impression that the STEPS program is appropriate for every person with borderline personality disorder. I think we have all learned that it is not one size fits all, and that the real challenge, because there are at least 6 evidence-based treatment programs for borderline personality disorder, but what we really have not determined yet is what is the best program for a certain individual. As we look at selecting group members, 2 things are extremely important. One is the ability to share time with other members of the group. And the second comes back to remembering that the STEPS program focuses on the present. So part of the challenge of being a member of a STEPS group is to learn to limit the discussion of individual problems to those elements that serve the goals of STEPS. And it does not mean that someone can never bring up some kind of a past issue or situation, but only to the extent that it is appropriate to the topic or skill that is being discussed, and then looking at how one could use that skill in dealing with that or a similar problem. Again, for therapists who might be considering putting a group together, motivational interviewing can be very helpful, where the person who's being considered for the group really can identify where they are in the process of seeking treatment, but can also articulate what their goal is for this program and the reasons for attending. As we look at our many years of experience and also the experience of many groups both in the U.S. and worldwide, we also have a pretty good idea of people who would not be good candidates for the STEPS program. Now, on the previous slide, when we talked about being able to share time with others, limit the discussion of individual problems, and so forth, that may be because the difficulty with that might be because at that point in time, a person was not ready to do that. So it may be that at a later time, that person, in fact, would be able to successfully complete the STEPS program. As we look at slide 13, and we might want to, again, very carefully look at the recommendations. The first being that often individuals who are extremely narcissistic do not do well in the STEPS program. And by that, what we really mean is the person who believes that they are so much more severe than everyone else in the group that they can demand an inordinate amount of time and attention during the group that then does not allow other people to be able to participate to an equal extent. But even more important, I think, is the ability to appreciate that even though someone else's problems sound different from your own, to appreciate that they are as painful for that person as your particular ones may be for you. So I think, again, this is something to consider. Obviously, the safety of everyone in the group is extremely important. And so we cannot have people who deal with conflict either by physically threatening others or intimidating others. Now, again, I've put an asterisk next to antisocial personality disorder traits, individuals who often are in trouble with the law, again, who may be willing to exploit or victimize others. On the other hand, mild antisocial personality disorder traits did not necessarily predict a poor outcome for that person in our randomly controlled trial of STEPS that was published in 2008. So that, again, we ask that the individual therapist know the person well, know the past history, and generally I can only think of just a very few cases where someone had to be asked to leave group. We have never had any physical threats to another group or to another group member, but again, occasionally there have been some situations where it did not feel safe to have the person continue. those are definitely exceptions. As Sunny remarked at the beginning, much of my work in the last 7 or 8 years has actually been in the corrections system, both in prisons and community corrections. And interestingly, this might be an environment where you might have more expectation that there could be physical acting out or threats. And in all of that time, that has not happened. And I really believe that is because the individuals who are selected to participate are well known to the mental health professionals in the corrections system. I've also made a notation to avoid having only one male in a group. And the reason for that is that, and I will tell you that there are many places that actually have separate groups for men and women. Over the years, we have always had mixed groups, but again, we have avoided having only one male because we did not want that lone male to run the risk of being seen by the women in the group as representing all males, particularly if they have had some negative experiences with males in the past. So I think that it is helpful for both the males and the females. Now, in the perfect world, I think it's wonderful if you can have two group leaders, one a male and one a female, because it's a great way to demonstrate good communication. And again, oftentimes for the males in the group, it is another positive male role model, and it is also a very positive male role model for the women in the group. But I will again tell you, there are many successful groups that have two women group leaders, and there are at least two groups in Iowa that are all women in the group led by two male group leaders. And again, they have been running these groups for a number of years very successfully. So I would not say that it's a hard and fast rule as to the gender of the group leaders. The reason that we do recommend having two group leaders is because the group runs for 20 weeks, and so it's good to have two leaders to make sure that if one is not available, that the group does not have to be canceled. So I think that's, again, helpful. But there are situations, again, depending on the resources in the setting, where you may have to go with just one group leader. On slide 14, we have the recommended format, which definitely it can be adapted to the requirements of various settings. So as you see here, typically the group runs for 20 weeks, 2-hour sessions, but in some places they do 2 1-hour sessions a week. In a residential facility that I'm aware of, they do 3 45-minute sessions during the week. So that is very flexible. And I've talked about the advantage to having two trainers. I've also talked about the reinforcement team. And when the group finishes, which, by the way, when the STEPS group starts, it is then closed for the 20 weeks because each skill builds on the previous skill. Now, when the group is finished, some people actually may request to repeat the basic group. In some cases, group leaders may feel that the person would benefit from going through the group again. We sometimes call that going through it at a higher level. Others finish the 20 weeks and may elect to go on to a one-year follow-up program that meets only twice monthly, and I'll talk about that in part two. STEPS is a three-step program, as you see on slide 15. And that first step is to become aware of what is this disorder called borderline personality disorder, learning the DSM criteria, being able to entertain the notion that at least some of the patient's difficulties may be reflected by these criteria. We find that oftentimes the term borderline personality disorder does not have a lot of meaning for the individual, and that they are much more at home with the term emotional intensity disorder, or EID. In our manual, they are used interchangeably. And then again, the identifying the thought filters or schemas. The second step is to learn five basic skills of emotion management training, and finally, eight skills of behavior management training. The original metaphor, and you see a drawing on slide 18, in the Bartles Manual, the original metaphor for emotional intensity was the tornado. And interestingly, when we started the STEPS program, a patient brought in a drawing done many years earlier when she was asked to describe how she felt. We wanted to make that rather abstract concept of a continuum more concrete by having a five-point scale, and thought we were very clever in identifying each level with a weather symbol, and you see that original continuum on slide 21. Moving on to slide 22, as one of the patients astutely pointed out to us, she felt that she had no more control over the weather than she did her emotional intensity, but she could control pots on a burner, and she drew this for us. Another group actually decided they would use a volcano in various stages to characterize the emotional intensity. Actually, in the manual, we have put all three designs because the really important part here is not the drawings themselves, although they are helpful because many people are very visual, but rather that this is an early warning system. Once you are able to identify your emotional intensity continuum, and it is important to realize that for many people, the experience of this disorder is that there's only two columns that they could initially fill out on this continuum. Either one, where emotional intensity was neutral, and in a split second, it could go to level five with the pot boiling over or the tornado or the volcano erupting. And there is often the perception that there is nothing in between. That is part of what we teach in the STEPS program, and that is to recognize what's happening in between, and you'll have a more vivid picture of this shortly. So this is the end of part one, and if we have a quick question or two, I'm happy to answer it before we go on to part two.
Okay. So I don't think we have any questions yet.
Okay, that's
so
great.
So we can, I think everything's been really clear, so we can go ahead and continue.
Okay, and then we should be allowing adequate time at the end for additional questions. Now, one of the things I did want to mention is that if there are professionals who are interested in having a copy of the emotional intensity continuum, again, they can simply email me and we're very happy to share that. People sometimes say, I can't really do the whole steps program, but I like the idea of the continuum. That's something I could use in individual therapy. And so we are happy to make that available. We just simply request that you retain the copyright information on the continuum. So now what we're going to talk about in part two, and we will be now on slide 25, is the process when we first introduce the idea of the continuum, so that you just have an idea of how you help patients to identify this, or if you are someone with borderline personality disorder, this might be something you can actually work on yourself. So we start with one where we tend to favor the pots on a burner just because of the sense of control. But again, the pictures are not really the critical part here in terms of filling this out. So at column one, when there's no heat under the burner, we ask people just to talk about some of the feelings they have. So you can see that in the first four that are listed on the slide, and certainly there can be many more. The next is to talk about what you're thinking. And finally, on the right-hand column, what are you doing? What behaviors are you doing when there's no heat under the burner? Now, as I mentioned earlier in the beginning, if we are to say to someone with this disorder, what happens next? They are going to say, oh, well, I'm at five. So we go to five. And we can see that intensity. We look at those feelings, those first four feelings that happen to be listed on the slide, and there can certainly be many more. Now, someone might look at this and say, oh, I feel abandoned at two, or I feel helpless at three. They would put it in their two column or their three column, because everyone's continuum looks different. And what's happening to your thoughts? In this case, they are racing, and what kinds of things are you doing? And so we can see this. So we see the very intense feeling of rage as one of the feelings. And down here at the bottom of the right-hand column, we see suicidal behavior. So whatever it is that the person experiences at five, it's written on their copy of the continuum. And then we say, okay, what's happening right before that? And we go to four. And so if you'll remember, we had rage at five. At four, we have anger. There we suddenly realize there's different levels of intensity. We go down to the bottom of that list and see suicidal thoughts. And so that, again, is different from the actual behavior. Someone might be thinking about cutting, but they are not doing it at four. So they eventually will become aware of the fact that they have a choice. There's something they can use a skill to keep from going any higher, or maybe even to notch down a little. Right before that, we go to three, as you can see that on slide 28. So we had rage at five, anger at four. At three, you're frustrated. We go to the next slide, 29, and you see the two column. So here we had all these levels of intensity. We had rage at 5, anger at 4, frustration at 3, and at 2 is irritability. And so, in fact, here is the continuum of a typical emotional intensity episode. Now, on slide 30, let's just fill in that piece about the cognitive filters, and I do love the little illustration down in the right-hand corner because it is like looking through a lot of hair in your face. When you look at a situation, you don't see the whole picture. You only see what comes through the openings. It's also remembering that everyone has different filters. Sometimes conflict between two people is really conflict between different filters. As we look at slide 31, again, you can look at the common filters that seem to predominate in this disorder. And again, you can read these at your leisure. And you can look at Jeff Young's book to get a further explanation. And, of course, they are explained fully in the STEPS manual. The goal, ultimately, is to replace those negative filters with positive ones. Now, in terms of why the filters are important, on slide 34, you can see that filters are made up of all of these things on the left. They go through your particular filter, leading to distorted thoughts and produce feelings, the physical sensations, action urges, and behaviors, and the pot is boiling over. On slide 36, what you see are what we would consider the essential STEPS elements, the BEST or the Borderline Evaluation of Severity over Time, which is a self-rating scale. In some places, we have found that people prefer to leave off the term borderline, and so that it's been changed to something called the QEST, or Quick Evaluation of Severity over Time, but it basically rates the criteria and how much interference they have given the person, and I'll show you a picture of the BEST in just a minute. We've talked about learning the criteria for BPD, and I'm going to show you a picture of a completed continuum. We've talked about the filters, and if someone is in a setting where they're not able to do the whole program, we would certainly consider that the 5 skills of emotion management are extremely important. Moving on to slide 37, you see a picture of the BEST again. We've had people ask if they could just get a copy of the BEST and simply email, and I will be happy to provide that. But what is nice is that it is filled out each week, and so over the 20 weeks, the person really has a picture of what is happening to their disorder. And one of the things you may be looking at is, well, what's this little blip over here on the right-hand side, which corresponds to somewhere around week 17 or 18. And what that has generally indicates is that we are talking about group ending and that filter of abandonment suddenly kicks in, but with talking about it, talking about follow-up options, as you can see, it comes down very quickly and continues to decrease. If you're wondering about what a typical session is like on slide 39, this would be the format. We always have some kind of relaxation exercise. We use a variety so people can experience the ones that are most helpful for them. And again, you can see the typical format. The manual, by the way, is divided into two parts. The first half is a weekly lesson plan for the group leader, so you know step by step what you will be doing, what materials you need, what the homework assignment is. The second half contains the weekly packets for people in the group, and you have permission to copy those lessons, and we suggest giving them out one at a time. If we were to hand someone a three-ring binder that was already complete, it could look very overwhelming. The next slide, which is slide 40, talks about the education component for the reinforcement team, and the reason that we think this is important. We've talked about the importance of consistent responses using the same language, and we actually have some cards that we hand out. We've talked about on slide 41 who's included on that reinforcement team. In our setting, because of the distance people have to drive to get to us, we generally do that session in a two-hour evening session. However, there are some places that break it down and have a monthly meeting. Again, the reinforcement team members being allowed to attend any regular sessions after the evening session, that is with permission of the entire group, as well, of course, as the person who is in the group. But it has generally been a very, very successful experience on both sides. The materials that are available for the reinforcement team include two brochures that are on slide 42. And the basic response to the person who is in an emotional intensity episode is shown on slide 43. Each time the person accesses someone in the system, they have a card that you see on slide 44. We have it both in a pocket-sized card. We also have those cards for each of the skills, and so patients may give those to members of the reinforcement team, so that the person does not have to come up with some kind of unique response. And this tends, as I said, to also maintain emotional intensity to contain emotional intensity for the person responding. Finally, the STAIRWAYS program, the acronym STAIRWAYS, stands for each of the goals listed on this slide. I mentioned earlier, STAIRWAYS is designed to reduce the abandonment fears, but also to decrease the intensity of service. We encourage people who have completed steps to start to fill their lives with some other activities. But again, the scheduling is flexible. I always say that STEPS gives patients the skills to survive, but STAIRWAYS is designed to help them thrive. In terms of what facilitators need to become a group leader, those are listed on slide 47, and I'm always happy to provide more information to those who might be interested. On the STEPS website, we have a list of literature references. On slide 48, you see a summary of the research studies. And again, I'm always happy to provide you with additional references. Finally, STEPS, it does have a website, and you can contact us through the website, or you may contact me as listed on the final slide. Here is a picture of the University of Iowa Medical Complex, and my email is listed at the bottom. So with that, I want to stop so we have some time for questions, and as I mentioned, if they're or additional questions we don't get to, I'm happy to answer general questions by email. So, Sunny, I will turn it back to you.
Yeah, thank you so much. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
So we have a couple of questions. So the first one is about the idea of a cognitive filter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really interesting idea, and I wondered if you might say a little bit about how that might be similar to or different from the idea of cognitive distortion from CBT. And then also, I was curious about how you selected the specific list of cognitive filters for the STEPS program that you have listed on the worksheet.
Okay. I think I have listed 7 on the slide. I believe mm-hmm. that in the manual there's actually 10. As I mentioned, we contacted Jeff Young to ask him. What we were finding is that his original schema questionnaire seemed to produce these particular schemas, or what we call cognitive filters, over and over, but we also found that many patients found it extremely tedious to fill out the longer questionnaire. And so with his permission, we were able to identify 64 questions that seemed to yield the same maladaptive filters. And so the way that we talk about it is that these filters give rise to distorted and negative thoughts, but that also there is a connection between the criteria and these filters, particularly as we look at probably the first one, which is abandonment, the belief that anybody you get close to will ultimately abandon you. And then we also talk about how that drives behavior. So one of the things that often happens is that, and it also plays into the trust, mistrust filter, is that when someone with the disorder gets into a therapeutic relationship or a significant relationship, it's almost as though they are constantly testing to see what will get the other person to leave. And, of course, if you make the test hard enough, at some point, in fact, some people may leave, and then that just turns around and reinforces the belief. Another way that these filters can operate is that in the case of abandonment, what I sometimes would find is that I would meet a patient, we would start a really, you know, we would establish a good relationship, but at some point, the person would suddenly leave. And as I started to think about it, I realized that if you believe in your heart of hearts that anyone you get close to will ultimately abandon you, if you leave first, at least you're in control of when it happens. And so we give those as examples. And again, that's that light bulb moment very often when people will say, oh my gosh, I do that, I do that. And so, as they say, it's also, I think, being able to learn what your common filters are and to be able to identify examples is that it takes away from this idea that somehow you're just a messed up bad person, but that, in fact, this makes sense. And it's not hard sometimes to look back and see how that filter may have developed. And again, remember, in the manual, we talk about some of those, you know, that we flesh out what the filters look like and also how they may have arisen. Not with the idea that we would blame the past, but that we would just have a better understanding and acceptance and know that this is what we need to work on and challenge in cognitive therapy. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay.
That was very clarifying. Okay, great. So I will go ahead and I'll go ahead and have us end 1 minute early rather than having another question and having us go too far over. But thank you so much for your time. This was really wonderful. And,
well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. And again, as they say, if there are some other questions that people have, they certainly can email, and I will do my best to answer them.
Okay,
thank you
wonderful.
So much, Nancy and Sunny.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, it was great to do, and the time passed very quickly. And so, again, I'll look forward to seeing you all in person as we move along, and certainly in October in Rome.
Wonderful.
Okay,
thanks again, Nancy.
Summer.
Thank you, Sunny.
Okay.
Good night, everyone. We don't have a call next week because it's Father's Day, so 2 weeks from tonight.
Okay.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.